WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. For the many bureaucrats, corrupt army generals, black market racketeers, and others who held power and wealth in the old Soviet system, making a buck has never been easier. Organized crime is the downside of free enterprise in the new Russia. The Russian mob, Red Fellas, to borrow a phrase from the New Republic, is the subject of Comrade Criminal, Russia's New Mafia, a new book by reporter Stephen Handelman. Handelman spent nearly 6 years in Moscow as bureau chief for the Toronto Star. He's now at the Harriman Institute at Columbia University. Terry Gross spoke with Stephen Handelman last week. He says that organized crime became the first growth industry to take hold after the Soviet Union collapsed.
Well, if you can try to think back to the era of the old Soviet Union, when people could walk the streets with absolutely no fear any time of day or night, guns in the hands of civilians were an absolute fantasy. The only people who had guns were really the KGB or the army. Not even the police really carried guns. And all of a sudden, the Soviet Union collapsed, and people began to see the kind of crime in the streets, shootings, explosions, kidnappings that you would associate with Chicago in the 1920s. There was something like a 40% increase in ordinary crime and violent crime in the first year since the Soviet Union fell. It was an amazing shock for Soviet citizens, and not just people of Russia, but pretty much all over the country.
And how connected is this new crime wave to organized crime?
Well, we've only just really begun to discover that this crime wave really had its roots in the old Soviet system. For something like 40 or 50 years, there was an organized crime hierarchy in the Soviet Union. Much of it was based out of the prisons. These people were, in fact, called thieves in law, vory v zakonie. And they had their own special code. They saw them, many of the people I talked to saw themselves as the original anti-communists. And once the system fell, they were really the one institution, aside perhaps from the Russian Orthodox Church, which really survived the breakdown of just about every other, just about the banks, the police system, political systems. They were the only institution that really survived the apocalypse. And they, of course, had a perfect network of their own that continued past the fall of the Soviet Union. They had the infrastructure, they had the contacts around the old empire that could really give them a leg up to make money. And that's, in fact, what they did. They began smuggling, getting involved in the new privatized businesses and the new small enterprise, free enterprise economy, and they began making millions and billions of dollars.
So how pervasive is organized crime in Russia now, and in the whole former Soviet Union? What areas of business and culture does it most control?
There's probably no area in Russia today which is not in some way touched by organized crime. One estimate that I saw recently says something like 80% of the businesses or business operations in Russia are involved in one way or the other with crime syndicates, with the mafia. That doesn't necessarily mean they're partners with them, but they could be just paying protection money. That in itself has added an amazing amount of burden to the country as it tries to transit into a free enterprise economy. And some people have estimated that it's added 20% a month to the inflation rate.
The payoffs?
The payoffs obviously force people to raise the price on goods. There already are no longer any price ceilings on most of the goods or food that's sold in Moscow and St. Petersburg. But the single fact of having to pay people for protection adds on an extra burden of inflation.
You write that smuggling has become the passport to quick riches in Russia, and everybody wants to get rich. What are some of the goods that are being smuggled now?
You see everything from icons to paper clips to tanks to Kalashnikov rifles, just about everything that you can pick up off a factory floor or out of one of the old military enterprises in the old Soviet Union can be taken across the border and usually is. There is a smuggling, anti-smuggling operation, one of many, that took place a few years ago on the border of Estonia and the old Soviet Union. And people in a single day discovered millions of dollars worth of goods that were moving, even including a military plane, that were being moved out of Russia and into the Baltics for resale later on in the West.
You say the most profitable commodity in the black market is arms. What kinds of arms, and why are arms the most profitable?
Well, arms are probably the most easiest commodity to get right now in Russia. Both for two reasons. The military factories have suffered probably the worst since the fall of the Soviet Union. Many of the state orders have dried up, and you still have thousands of people working in these old arsenals and really with no place to sell the stuff. So it's logical that the military-industrial complex, as it was in the Soviet Union, would start to look for new outlets in order to survive. And they've had some very good partners in the military itself. In fact, that was one of the origins, many people say, of the problems in Chechnya, because many of the Chechen rebels got their arms in secret sales from army generals who managed to get them trainloads of weapons, including very advanced weapons, that fueled their rebellion.
Stephen Handelman is my guest, the author of the new book, Comrade Criminal, Russia's New Mafia. You report that the arms trade is financed in part with drug money, and that drugs are the second biggest illicit market. What drugs?
Every kind of drug you can imagine. Many people are calling the southern area of the old Soviet Union, which is Central Asia, the new Golden Triangle of the world. Huge amounts, thousands of hectares of land are now being given over for the opium poppies. It always has been an area where there's been a lot of drug traffic from the times of the war in Afghanistan. But now it's become, in effect, big business. You see caravans going regularly across the border at Afghanistan, coming in from Pakistan and going through Central Asia, plus you're seeing local production. On the other side of the country, in the Caucasus, you see a lot of synthetic labs, drug factories. There was cases where chemistry students created a very powerful synthetic drug, and they made millions by manufacturing it and then selling it through some of the organized groups that began to specialize in drugs. So Russia has become both a very important transit corridor for drugs out of Southeast Asia, as well as a source of narcotics traffic itself. The main problem is that the attitude of the drug industry, of the illegal narcotics industry, is that Russia is a huge open frontier right now. It's a place where they can launder money. It's a place where they can use to transit drugs from abroad into Western Europe. And in fact, that's created some very worrying business partnerships. Among them, for instance, the Colombian cartels have been known to start working with some of the major Russian gangs. And it's a problem, obviously, that's worrying professionals all over the world.
You know, we're talking about the mafia and how it's infiltrated every aspect of business in the former Soviet Union. What's it like to do business in a legit way? Is it easy to make a profit? Is it easy to get through the bureaucracy?
Well, that's one of the reasons why crime, or particularly organized crime, is such a significantly different kind of problem in Russia today than it is, for instance, in the West. In most countries that we're used to, that we're accustomed to, crime is usually based on illegal activities. That you rob a bank, you hold up a store, you get involved in drug trafficking, or you name it. In Russia, a great deal of the crime, the organized crime, is based on activities that we would consider legal in any other part of the world. And that's mainly because that there's still a great deal of ambiguity in Russia between what is legal business and what's illegal business. This is a country that's only recently come out of a system in which making a profit was considered speculation. And you could go to jail for it, or sometimes, in some cases, you could be shot for it. So the businessman in Russia has always had a sort of cloud hanging over him, and he's never really been trusted either by law enforcement, by the bureaucracy, or by the ordinary citizen in the street. Now that you have a lot of money flying around. You have ostensibly a system where you can open up your own business, you can invest your own money and get a profit back. Russia has turned almost 180 degrees, but yet the legal system, the legal codes and popular attitudes still regard this as very, very suspect. So the businessman very often is forced to find protection, to find help for his debts, to find any kind of support in the crime world or in the corrupt bureaucracy.
Say I was buying an American CD. Would I have any way of knowing whether what I was buying was a black market CD that organized crime was behind, or whether it was like a legit businessman behind it?
You really wouldn't. I mean, what you would see on, you could buy it on the streets of Moscow in the Arbat Mall. You could buy it in one of the Western-type stores, and you'd really have no idea where it came from. The odds are, for instance, you could buy a Western book. We know that copyright law is so bad right now in Russia that many books are pirated. They're printed in huge runs of the millions, in fact, and distributed all across the old Soviet Union, Russia, and all the other republics. And nobody gets paid any rights. It's a problem for authors, particularly in the West. You just have no idea whether what you're buying comes from a legitimate source or not. But you can pretty well guess that any kind of business, whether you go into a showroom to buy a Mercedes, or whether you're going into a Western delicatessen to buy food, that usually there will be some sort of organized crime or corrupt involvement. And that doesn't necessarily put the legitimate business owner down. It's just part of the way of life in Russia today.
My guest is Stephen Handelman, the author of the new book, Comrade Criminal, Russia's New Mafia. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Stephen Handelman is my guest, author of the new book, Comrade Criminal, Russia's New Mafia. What is the government trying to do to fight organized crime?
Funny you should ask. By my count, there have been something like 7 wars on crime over the last 4 years announced by Yeltsin or his ministers. None of them, of course, have gotten anywhere. The government continues to say and admits now that organized crime and corruption are its biggest problems. They dwarf even some of the economic problems that Russia has today. But they really haven't found a way to go after the roots of the crime problem in Russia. Most of the time, they've skimmed the surface. They've tried to harden the laws would define organized crime. In some cases, they've tried to go back to the old Soviet-style crackdowns, lifting a lot of the civil liberty protections that were developed in 1991 and 1992, and which impressed a lot of people about Russia's new turn towards democracy. The real problem is that the enforcement of a lot of the laws would end up having to be done by the same officials who are implicated in the violation of them.
How has the explosion in organized crime affected street crime?
Well, they both took off together. Street crime was a huge problem in the first years after the Soviet Union fell. The security for everything else that was wrong with the system, the security of the old system had just collapsed. It was just a memory now. With that, you had an outbreak of organized violence, or violence committed by organized groups who were involved in a very serious turf battle in most of the cities of Russia. Some of these groups were involved at the beginning of the drug trade. Others were just trying to stake out areas of the city, private businesses that they could take over. So you began to see bodies in the street, kidnappings, assassinations. A lot of the street crime has since begun to decline. I mean, Russia is still not a safe city. It's, of course, safer than many American cities. There's still reason for people to worry about walking alone in the street at night. But the fear that ran through the country and every urban area of Russia for the first few years has declined a bit. But the organized violence, the racketeering, the brutality, sometimes open gang wars in the middle of a crowded street, has gotten even worse. And that's what has begun to characterize crime in Russia. It's much more of an organized problem, and bystanders, of course, get hurt in the crossfire.
The way you described it, it sounds like the cops really aren't equipped to deal with the gangsters. The gangsters have cellular phones and much better guns, and the cops, have old equipment?
Well, some of them are actually driven to going after criminals in a taxi.
Really?
It's that bad. I mean, the cars are in bad shape. They don't have the money to pay for the gas. Gas is too expensive. I mean, that's changing a bit, but it's obviously very embarrassing for any Russian policeman who would like to do a good job that he really can't go after the criminals. And even, of course, if he could go after the criminals, one fellow I got very friendly with, a captain in the organized crime squad in Moscow, told me that he would never tell his superiors about any raid that he was doing until the actual day, because he was afraid that if he did, someone would pass the word along to his targets and he'd never get anywhere.
You met a lot of law enforcement officials. You also, I think, talked to a lot of the gangsters.
I did.
Who were some of the people who you spoke? What kind of people were they? How did they get into it? Maybe you could tell us about one or two of the more highly placed people in the organized crime world.
They were very, very impressive people, actually. There are two types of mafiosi. The older, traditional type of gangster who comes out of this prison culture is in a way, a kind of formidable and very impressive kind of fellow. He usually was a man. There were very few women, in fact, none that I found, that were involved in the organized underworld in the Soviet Union. They had their own sense of honor. They had a special code. The old godfathers couldn't even marry according to the code, because that would, since they spent so much time in prison, that would make them vulnerable to blackmail. I met one fellow in a hotel that he'd taken over since the end of the Soviet Union, and he called himself the Armenian. He would never let me know his real name, and he was quite proud of the kind of activities he did. He said, for instance, that he would mediate between businessmen, as he put it, who had business problems. Although he said that he wasn't a businessman himself, he was there as sort of a diplomat to make the city safer for the ordinary person. A lot of them see themselves as the bulwark against the collapse of law and order, interestingly enough. But then you have a different kind of person who is what I call the comrade criminal, who's got one foot in the old underworld but the other in the new murky bureaucracy. And they're much more unlikable people. Those that I talked to were very rough, were hardly interested in talking. In fact, some of them are quite dangerous. The more some journalists have probed in Russia itself, the connections between this new bureaucracy and criminal activities, the more risky it's become for them. Several journalists have already been killed for poking too deeply.
Yeah, some of those stories have made headlines here in the United States.
Yeah.
Well, were you worried about that?
Not really at that time. It's a kind of an ornate dance to get to meet these people. You go through middlemen, and at that time, many of them really didn't have a concept of what the Western press would be like. I mean, they knew, of course, the Russian press, and they had a great deal of contempt for them. I met one group of old-fashioned criminals standing on a street corner in a city in central Russia, and they were very reluctant to meet me. They searched me several times before they would even talk to me. But once we got talking and I started to explain what I was after, they thought this was a great joke, and they just sort of poured out their stories and their anger and their irritation at how, in fact, they were being left behind by the more sophisticated criminals of the city. And a lot of them saw me as, in fact, they used, it's funny, I asked at one point why they kept using the informal Russian verbs towards me, or Russian tense towards me. And they said and I was told by a friend, they don't really regard you as human. I mean, you're someone who's completely outside of their experience. You're not a threat to them. They're not worried about you. So I felt comfortable talking to them. But unfortunately, I think things have changed over the last year or two. And now that there's been a lot of press and a lot of headlines about the Russian mafia, they've become a lot more unwilling and resentful, unwilling to talk, and resentful of outsiders who probe too deeply.
Did you get the impression that people in organized crime were the better businessmen in Russia?
Well, they certainly think they are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's very interesting. At the time of the coup, if you remember that wonderful scene of Yeltsin standing on the tank in front of the Russian White House, standing off the tide of fascism and communism, which was trying to engulf Russia again, all the people who were many of the people who were around him were in fact being fed, and some of them were being armed by local mobster groups who saw in the Russian reformers a way to get out of the problems they had been facing under the old regime. So many of them supported openly or secretly a lot of the reform initiatives in the early 90s. Even the old reform mayor of Moscow, Gavril Popov, has admitted that he had shady characters who gave him the money to print election pamphlets. So there was a kind of, I guess, marriage of convenience between the organized criminals and the reformers in the early years just after the breakup. But that kind of went a bit sour within, I would say, a year or two, when the reform, the economic reforms, what they called shock therapy, were instituted, and some of the organized criminals began to feel themselves really under attack, that their businesses were being threatened by it. And you would hear in the saunas and steam rooms where many of them gathered that these new reformers were bad for business. So you had suddenly the organized crime, the comrade criminals, were moving over into supporting much more conservative or old-line politicians, which they're doing today.
Well, Stephen Handelman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Stephen Handelman speaking with Terry Gross. Handelman is the author of Comrade Criminal, Russia's New Mafia. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.